Mariana Fregonesi from the University of Sao Paulo. Go on.
Good morning. I am Mariana, and today I'm delighted to present the paper titled Carbon Credit Accounting, Evidence of Assets Futures in Brazilian Market that Do Not Perfectly Qualify as Intangibles. I developed this paper in collaboration with Silvio, who is here, Maria Paula, Maísa, and Alessandra. We appreciate the opportunity to share our findings with you. First of all, we have to acknowledge the Brazilian National Council for Scientific and Technological Development, CNPq, that supports the broader research project in which this paper was evolved. And we also thank University of São Paulo, especially our school FEARP and our research group INCONT. The accounting for carbon credits is still surrounded by doubts. There is a consensus that carbon credits are assets, but the accounting classification of these assets is still subject of ongoing debate. From literature, we realize that the favorite accounting treatment for carbon credits is to classify them as intangible assets. However, practitioners have adopted different accounting treatments, such as inventories or financial instruments. It led us to think credits, carbon credits do not fit perfectly into intangible assets. So the purpose of this paper is to describe and analyze through a positive approach cases of accounting practices for carbon and decarbonization credits of buying and selling companies in voluntary and regulated market through their specific futures in Brazil. This research adopts a qualitative approach using document analysis. Brazil is a relevant case. Brazil has two incentive models for reducing emissions, the voluntary market of carbon credits as a result of Kyoto Protocol, and the regulated market specific for decarbonization credits generated from the biofuels that is called CBios. CBios trading takes place in the over-the-counter market organized by the Brazilian Stock Exchange. And the literature, Brazil is a relevant case just because the literature on carbon credit accounting has focused on the European cap and trade system. Since the Kyoto Protocol, voluntary markets have developed around the world, and papers on companies' practices and incentives in low regulation environment are still few. Moreover, recently, the Security and Exchange Commission of Brazil has recognized the importance of providing uniform accounting treatment for carbon credits and prepared an accounting guideline based on current IASB documents. The guidance covers operation in both the voluntary and the regulated markets, and also addresses the recognition of non-formalized obligations for offsetting emissions. The draft of was open for comments until October 20. Our study, I will explain it fastly. After understanding Brazilian regulated and voluntary markets, we simplified the flow for obtaining and using carbon credits for seller and buyer perspectives, aiming to discuss accounting practices. And this overview, this picture, will serve as the foundation for our presentation of case studies. For this paper, we analyzed the financial reports of a selling entity versus a buying entity for each of the two markets. We chose the most relevant buyer in each model and then chose a seller capable of engaging in direct transactions with the chosen buyer. The analyzed cases, except of the ones selling on the voluntary markets, are publicly listed companies with audited reports, of course. To analyze the buyer's standpoint in the voluntary markets of carbon credits, we examined a Brazilian company recognized for pioneering sustainability strategies that has declared publicly its commitment to be carbon neutral since 2007. It is a Brazilian cosmetics industry founded in 1969 that employs around 35,000 people and registered a revenue of over 6 billion euros in 2021. Companies operates as a buyer in the voluntary carbon credit in the voluntary markets since it needs to offset its emissions with carbon credits. Since 2011, company financial statements brings a dedicated page addressing the carbon neutral program and its impacts, in which the company reaffirms the commitment publicly assumed as a constructive obligation. Annually, company contracts audited inventory of carbon emissions, which support accounts for liability increase, as opposed to recognition and expenses. These liabilities is measured based on the best estimation of disbursement that will be required to settle the obligation. At the same time, the company invests in projects with social and environmental benefits that are linked to reducing GHG emissions. Hence, the company invests in long maturation projects, and these investments will generate carbon credits after the maturation. The company recognizes such disbursements as other current assets, measured on the initial recognition by the amounts invested in the projects, and later revisited according to the expectations of certificates resulting from the project. Finally, the recognized liability is reduced when carbon certificates from the invested projects are effectively transferred to the company and registered as retired. Therefore, other current assets balances are offset against liability balances. In contrast, from the seller's perspective, we analyzed a non-profit organization created in 1992 that reports in notes the transaction with the company presented as case one. We analyzed the 2021 financial report, which was audited by a Brazilian independent auditing company. The organization is a seller in the voluntary market because its main activity is carrying out biodiversity conservation projects. For the first stage, it's worth saying that the organization does not own the land, but instead exchange rights with the land owners to issue and trade carbon credits. Then it develops a carbon credit project and seeks to attract investors. Thus, the partnership with investors, like Case One Company, occurs when the restoration project has already been validated by independent certifiers, but not implemented yet. For this reason, when the Case One Company agrees to fund project development, there is no verified carbon credit yet. carbon credits will be available after maturation phase, as I said previously. About this first stage, case two reports describe the exchange transaction, but do not provide evidence of any accounting recognition or mention any potential related risks. After, just when receiving the resources, organization makes it the initial recognition. There is an increase of cash equivalent as opposed to the increase of non-current liabilities, named projects to execute. In further periods, by consuming cash equivalent resources for carrying out the project, the liabilities are appropriated to the result as revenue as the cash is changed into project costs simultaneously and by the same value, thus without earning profits or surplus. The entity report does not evidence any accounting recognition of issuing carbon credits after maturation, nor does it mention the accounting recognition of transferring emission rights to investors. Case 3, company is obligated as part of a Brazilian government policy to buy decarbonization credits called CBIOs, which are generated aiming to reduce fossil fuel emissions through the production of renewable fuels, like ethanol or biodiesel. So we have here a buyer company in a regulated market. Case 3 is a fuel distributor created in 1971 that is the leading fuel distributor in the country. It employs over 3,000 people and registered over 20 billion euros in 2021. Brazilian government determines annually national goals for fuel distributors that must buy CBIOs and retire it, that is, withdraw it from circulation by writing off the registration or at the custody keeper. The provisions are recognized monthly in current liabilities. They are measured by the costs of the amounts already purchased and the estimated average market value traded on the last day of the month for the remaining quantities. It's worth saying that in the accounting basis note, the company includes the provision for decarbonization credits among the estimates with a high level of judgment or complexity. The acquisition of CBIOs is recognized as addition to intangible assets against decrease of cash equivalent by payment. After, the retirement of CBIOs is recognized as write-offs of intangible assets against provision. In contrast, from the seller's viewpoint, we analyzed the first ethanol producer in Brazil to get certification for issuing and selling CBIOs. Case 4 company has been producing ethanol for over 100 years, and it is listed among the 5 largest sugarcane processors in Brazil. It employs 12,000 people and with 2021 revenue of over 1 billion euros. We analyzed the 2020 and 2021 financial reports, both audited by PwC. Company requests CBIOs issue proportionately to the volume of biofuel produced using a standardized methodology. The issuance of CBIOs, of each CBIO, depends of the registration of the CBIO producer, of the biofuel producer at the Brazilian National Agency, which checks and validates the invoices sent by producers and calculates the number of CBIOs to issue. However, there is no evidence of accounting recognition for this process. Unlike sellers in the voluntary market, attracting investors is not a problem in the regulated market because legislation ensures demand for CBIO. Case 4 company recognizes the CBIOs issued but not yet sold as inventories measured at net receivable value. The counterpart of this recognition is not disclosed. At the time of sale, inventories are written off, probably matching the same counterpart registered previously. And also the company recognizes other sales revenue with the counterpart in cash equivalent. No details on the transaction costs for achieving the certification was disclosed. We organized the discussion of our results for this presentation into three parts. The first presents our understanding of carbon credit asset accounting flow. The second part discusses features observed in the cases that don't fit exactly as intangible assets. And finally, the third part argue that IFRS should consider a specific standard for carbon credits. We categorized the different sources of a carbon credit controlled by the company and explored their potential applications. In the cases study, a company starts to control a carbon credit in the following situations. Arising as a consequence of the ordinary course of business, or received as a government grant, or resulting from the decision to invest in third-party projects that, after a period of maturation, will give rise to carbon credits, or due to the decision to acquire carbon credits already issued. The red arrows differentiate the sources that require a maturation period. Therefore, it takes a long time to the asset to be ready for use in the condition intended by the management. The carbon credit maturation process depends on decision made by the company. The decisions made by the... Can I continue?
After. Okay.
Or resulting from the decision to invest in third-party projects that, after a period of maturation, will give rise to carbon credits, or due to the decision to acquire... Sorry, I came back. The red arrows differentiate the sources that require a maturation period. Therefore, it takes a long time to the asset to be ready for use in the conditions intended by management. The carbon credit maturation process depends on decisions made by the company, but mainly depends on environmental conditions. Therefore, obviously, origins highlighted in red flows represent greater risk to the entity. When the carbon credit asset is ready for use, we identify only two possible destinations, sale and retirement, writing off the carbon credit liability. Let's begin by analyzing the scenario where carbon credits are generated during the ordinary course of business and take economic benefits from the asset through sale. When the carbon credit is obtained together with the production of a company's product and is sold later, it seems like inventory. Actually, paragraph 3 of intangible assets accounting standard states that intangible assets held by an entity for sale in the ordinary course of business is out of the IAS 38 scope. If so, carbon credits controlled by sellers or issuing companies should not be recognized as an intangible asset, but as inventory, because they are mainly held for sale. Even though carbon credits don't resemble typical goods, merchandise, land, or other properties, as provided by IAS 2. Since these are usually tangible. In the same way, carbon credits received as government grants are commonly intended for sale, since granting a company with carbon credits or allowances for retirement, that is, to offset its own emissions, does not make any sense. I believe that cases of voluntary market, especially case 2, the non-profit organization, brought us the most interesting insights. We observed that the seller and the buyer registered advance accounts, liability and asset respectively, but did not recognize a carbon credit asset. So we question where the risk of carbon credit is posed in their financial report, since cash disbursement is evident and carbon credit still depends on maturation process. When an advance is disclosed, risks of loss seems to be held by supplier, but we concluded that it's not clear whose end of the contract, case 1 or case 2, controls risks and benefits from carbon credit. We believe it's appropriate to classify carbon credit projects during the maturation process as internally generated intangible assets under development, since it's not incapable of operating in the manner intended by the management yet, and the complex validation system to obtain carbon credit appears to meet the requirements of paragraph 57 of IAS 38. To conclude this part of discussion, let's analyze the retirement option. As I said before, the asset apparently has two main economic benefits, trading it or retiring it. Retirement of carbon credits means settlement of the liabilities from carbon emissions, which seems for us different from obtaining benefits resulting from the use of the assets by the entity, like stated at paragraph 17. Thinking about this benefit resulting from the use of the asset, we understand that asset benefits from the use are expected to increase return on investment, which does not happen when retiring it. Carbon credit seems to have unique characteristics in terms of economic benefits, which do not fit perfectly into intangible assets. Not even into current classifications. Maybe they demand our own standardization. Okay. I will have only one. Okay. We need a specific standard. We believe a specific standard should establish principles for recognizing assets and liabilities regarding the control over the carbon credits and the possibility of measuring them at fair value or at cost, depending on how it expects to obtain its economic benefits, either through credit sale or retirement, and the availability of reliable information on credit prices. We believe the standard is necessary to avoid problems of accounting mismatching of assets and liabilities, to avoid problems to mismatch accounting treatment for both sides of an agreement involving carbon credits, and to avoid problems from inappropriate accounting choices for recognition and measurement, including possible earnings management. And then it's our contributions. And we are still reviewing this paper, and your contributions will be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
My discussion is going to be structured as follows. First, I will go over some takeaways that I took from the paper and how it relates, how the takeaways from the paper would inform a potential project that, of the ISB on pollutant pricing mechanisms. Then I'll make some observations around the standard setting implications that the authors derive from the paper. And finally, I will make some suggestions for extending the work, maybe not in this paper, but in the future, so that the takeaways are more meaningful for standard setters if they work on this project. So I'm very glad that I got to discuss this paper because I learned a lot about carbon credit accounting. The paper is a very informative read and provides a lot of information about an important IFRS jurisdiction, about the voluntary and regulated market, also by taking a very close look at these four companies. It contributes to our understanding of various schemes around the world by looking closely at Brazil. And it raises some important accounting issues which have been occupying the attention of a number of national standard setters. For example, in Brazil, there has been an exposure draft recently on carbon offset. Canada, where these carbon credit arrangements are also prevalent, the Canadian standard setter has been discussing a couple of issues with its IFRS accounting standards discussion group recently. And needless to say, the paper would be of relevance for the ISB reserve list project on polluting pricing mechanisms if it were to be added to the agenda. And I'm going to come back to this reserve list project in a minute. So the paper confirms that there is diversity in practice, and this diversity is along several dimensions. Diversity between in practice across the regulated and the voluntary market, also depending on the business model, whether the carbon credits are developed through own operations or through third parties, and whether there are some diversity in practice depending on the objective of holding the carbon credits. I think something that the paper would benefit from clarifying and emphasizing is whether the different practices are due to different economic nature or different fact patterns versus differences. The differences in outcome are due to different application, because it is the second question that would be of interest to the standard setter, whether economically similar transactions are accounted for differently. And I'll come back to the implications for standard setting, but before that, I just wanted to provide a little context of where the ISB stands on this at the moment. As you're probably aware, as a result of the third agenda consultation, the feedback of which was published last year, pollutant pricing mechanisms was added as a project on the reserve list. What does this mean? It means that it could be added to the work agenda before the next round of agenda consultation if there are resources resources permitting. Having said that, pollutant pricing mechanisms is on the horizon scanning of the ISB, so if there are indications that it is these issues are becoming pressing or urgent, it is possible to add the project from the reserve list to the work plan, again, depending on resources, because there are two very big projects coming up on intangibles and cash flow statements that also were added to the plan as a result of the third agenda consultation. So if this project was added to the agenda, the two things that would need to be addressed are the scope, whether it would apply to all pollutant pricing mechanisms or just to emission trading schemes, and also whether it would the board would develop the requirements for all types of companies, including scheme administrators and traders of carbon credits, or just for companies that participate in these schemes. And this project would be related to other projects, for example, the future project on intangibles, climate-related and other uncertainties project, the provisions, and also the work of the ISSB as far as the disclosures are concerned. The ISSB has done some work on this previously, so it could pick up where it left off and would develop requirements around the measurement and the recognition of carbon credits. So this is just as a background. Now, what I got from reading the paper in terms of standard setting implications, and I think Mariana didn't have much time at the end, but what came across is a need for a specific accounting standard that would address the different types of carbon credits, the recognition and the measurement that would ensure a faithful representation and avoiding misleading information. And the authors mention that this would the need for better comparability. Now, in many places in the paper, they talk about uniformity, and I'm not sure if you use the two things interchangeably, because they're not, and I think uniformity was in one of your last slides, because uniformity is obviously not what the standard setter's objective would be, but rather to ensure to develop requirements that ensure the economically similar transactions are accounted for in the same way, and which is which comes from the definition in the conceptual framework. So as Florian alluded earlier to a standard setter's objective, what would be the objective here if a specific standard were to develop? It would be first to understand why diversity in practice exists and is a potential solution that is proposed going to be useful to users. And in the next couple of slides, I will expand on these points. First, I was wondering, it is very useful to have a closer look at the four companies, but it would be interesting to know, and obviously these are major players on the market, but it would be interesting to know whether these practices are representative of the whole market, because it is clear that carbon credit arrangements are very prevalent in Brazil. And I was, if you were to maybe continue the work in that area, if you can extend the sample, which I guess would be the easier option, maybe not in such big detail, but if you collect information on certain economic characteristics and see if there is any, if the practices vary with certain economic fundamentals, I guess this will give an insight of why this diversity in practice exists. And the other option, which would be more difficult, would be to try and contact these companies through a survey or interviews to try and understand firsthand whether they really think the lack of comparability is creating an issue for them, and where they think the problem lies. And I was also thinking, if you were to extend the sample and have more data to work with, you could perhaps tackle a few of the issues that you raise in the paper, but I don't think there is any grounds for them at the moment. For example, you mentioned about some companies providing better disclosures than others that are to do with incentives, whether they are on the voluntary market or the regulated market. Also, you mentioned the possibility of earnings management, but we don't know if I think it's difficult to claim that just because there is no specific requirement and there is diversity in practice, companies would opt to opportunistic choices, right? It would be interesting to examine this further if you had a larger sample and with more characteristics. And or if you were to restate accounting practices that are currently non-comparable and see what the effect on companies' economic performance would be, I think this would also provide some insight whether a proposed solution of a standard that is going to provide, make the recognition and measurement comparable is going to have on the performance and on users' assessment, whether it's going to be useful for the users of financial statements. So these are the suggestions. Of course, they're quite broad. You can think about how to address this, but I think if you address some of these questions, which you do highlight in your paper, and provide some evidence around them, this would be quite meaningful for the standard setters if they were to work on this project. But I think it's, as I said, I learned a lot from the paper. Thank you, and good luck with the revision.
Thank you, Anna. Mariana, do you want to say?